great things to say about Mueller. And there will be more to come out.
We're going to leave it there. I want to thank you all for your input. Marcy Wheeler of EmptyWheel.net speaking to us from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Mehdi Hasan of Al Jazeera English, a host of the program Upfront, also an Intercept columnist. And thanks so much to Shaina Khadidal of the Center for Constitutional Rights. I'll be speaking Saturday in Chicago, 9:30 McCormick Place for the People's Summit. On Sunday, I'll give the keynote address at the New York City Green Festival, 1 p.m. Javits Convention Center. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And this is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show. And we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is Jay Koronek with you today, and today is June the 9th, 2017. So if you're listening on the podcast, remember anything happening after 1 to 2 o'clock on Friday, June the 9th, 2017, I don't know about. I can't talk about it. And if there's any corrections that happen after this date, of course, that's the way it goes. All opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, or students. Oh, we have some special guests in the studio. Coming into the studio just now, I see the big door opening. And yes, it's people from theater, the HFC theater people. And it's very exciting because they always make a very dramatic entrance. I mean, that's the nature of theater, right? Drama, theater. Well, drama and comedy, too. So and they're making themselves comfortable with our microphones here. So I know one of the people, Jerry Jablinski of the HSC Theater Department is here, and he's waving right now. So this is radio, you know, Jerry. Okay. Let me turn on your microphones. Okay, you can talk now, too, if you
Oh, you mean they didn't see the wave?
No, I'm sorry. Oh, sorry about that. We missed it. Jerry is has many special abilities, including he's a mime, too. That's M-I-M-E, and of course he's very good with nonverbal stuff, but yes, it is radio. Well, and our special guest who came in with him is?
Amanda Bates.
Amanda Bates. Okay. And they're both here because they wanted to, I especially wanted, but they wanted also to emphasize the fact that we've got another great play in the Adrey Auditorium on the main campus here at Henry Ford College coming up, starting next week, Thursday, June the 15th. And running just for two weekends, and it's kind of special. You might say, maybe you've never heard of the name Almost Maine before. That's Almost, comma, Maine. But it's a great play from everything I've read about it. An exciting play that actually started in community theater in Maine, of all places. So that's how much I know about that. But Amanda, what part are you playing in this exciting production? And I think it will be. Go ahead.
several parts. I think that's what makes it fun is there's a lot to work with, a lot of characters that you can delve into and explore. So it's quite a few parts.
Okay.
Actually.
So it's actually, if I read the information correctly, it's actually 9 short plays written by the same person. But about people that live in this fictional community, which is almost a town, which is, I guess, where they get the name Almost Maine.
It's, yeah, exactly.
It's a very small town, if it's almost a town. And so you play some parts in several of the plays?
Several different scenes.
Oh, that is challenging.
Yeah,
yes.
Very challenging.
If I may ask your background. You're a student here right now,
I was a student here for many years. I then went on to Eastern Michigan University. I have a bachelor's in theater arts, and then I kind of took a little break. So I'm coming back to it now and really excited because this is a really fun show to be a part of. And to work with Jerry again, it's been really nice.
Something about that excitement of being on the stage.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, really, it's it's not equal to being on the microphone, but still, it's I was in a couple of plays in high school, so yeah. I understand. My junior year play and the senior class play, but I got a big role too. But unfortunately, I was the only one that could memorize lines. Really, they could find nobody else that could memorize lines. So I got the lead. That's one way to get the lead, whether you're good or not.
You know, it's just a special skill.
Can
no
you
matter what.
Can you memorize the lines? Yes. Okay. But you're obviously past that. So you've done. Have you done play? You've done some plays elsewhere. If you were at all the way through BA at Eastern.
Yeah. Yeah. I did several shows there before I finished, and then I became a parent. And took quite a hiatus. So
that's very dramatic too,
yes,
of course.
It is. Uh-huh. Big role.
A lot of play acting involved and raising children, I guess.
Yeah. Amanda did a couple of wonderful roles here, most especially Adriana in Shakespeare's The Comedy of Errors and Fastrada in the musical Pippin. And then two of the major roles she did at Eastern were Hermione in The Winter's Tale and the general in Ubu Roy. So she's got a diverse background of some of some challenging roles and training experience as well. And we're doing something a little new in the spring and the summer now that Dr. Popovich, the head of our department, has retired. We're doing summer stock theater for our spring and summer shows. And what that means is we're taking some of our best students, as well as our regular students, and we're inviting guests like Amanda, alumni, to come in and work with and alongside of our students so that they get a chance to work with more advanced actors and other theater practitioners. Mm-hmm. We also have this semester another alum, Tim Pollock, who's a graduate of the Scottish Conservatory of Dramatic Arts in Scotland.
He of just all places, returned to Scottish the United Conservatories States. In Scotland. I remember that.
Yeah. Okay. And his specialty study was also acting, and he's serving as the acting coach for this production.
Great.
And also helping out backstage as the deck captain. One of the great things when you go into educational theater training is that they train you to do a lot of things. So, for instance, Amanda's got background in costuming and makeup as well as in acting. And Tim's very good with properties and organizational things as well as being an actor. And so everyone contributes in whatever way that they can and contributes to the production and demonstrates to new students that this is the way it's done. You contribute everything you can to the production. You share your skills. You learn from others. And that's what makes the best show.
Yeah, the best educational experience, too. Yeah,
exactly.
I know, just in general, when I started college many decades ago, but the rule was don't take too many classes from the same teacher, especially if it's in the same area. Like I was an English major in those early days.
Sure.
Read some plays, too, amazingly. You know, and saw some, even. But certainly, even here at WHFR, we have more than 50 student and alumni volunteers who help staff both on air and off air. And about a fourth of them, a fourth of that number, have been with us for more than 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So there's great mentoring from people who are doing a great job, and they may not do it as I told them to do it, but there's all these different ways to accomplish the goals that you need to accomplish, especially when you're talking about a creative art, artistic art. Some people, maybe you can, they're better at one approach rather than another, or they just need to explore a little more. And, and of course, exploration is part of the creative process too, is to that discovery, you know. So we have a wide variety of talent, in other words, that are in this play, and also the summer stock.
Yes, yes. Concept. So we're going on to the summer production. It's called Shooting Stars. It's about a women's basketball team, a trick basketball team, kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters. And so it takes place all in the locker room before the game. And so you've got the interactions of those characters.
Before the game, because I made a bad joke last week when I mentioned the story on the air about that. I said, it's going to be really noisy if they're bouncing the basketballs on on the stage. Boy, people don't realize how noisy that is when you bounce a ball on a wood stage, or even in a gym where they play basketball.
Yeah. Sure.
It's very loud.
Sure.
No, that sounds like great fun, too. And I think it's going to be, to start the first weekend in August?
August, yes. It's an August production. Yeah, sure. It goes for 2 weekends in August.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to that. Back to almost... Oh, I'm sorry, Jerry. Are you directing this play?
I'm directing and also the scenic designer and properties designer.
For Almost Maine.
For Almost Maine, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't... You must have written the press release itself because... You're so humble, you don't mention your name as the director. You mention your name, but you don't say, you're adjunct theater instructor here, as well as technical director and resident scenic designer for Henry Ford College Theater. But that you're the actual director, which is kind of a big deal. But you're helped by all this talent in the cast and crew too.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yes, it's always a collaborative effort, so we learn from each other. So, for instance, Tim brings his training from overseas, and of course, European training is a little different than ours and very intensive. He was in class 5-6 days a week from the morning till the evening, and that was all theater. Right? It was all acting-oriented, all performance-oriented. So he brings his skills, and then alumni bring their skills from wherever they trained and their experiences. And my training is predominantly in directing. My master's degree is in directing, although I've acted in 7 states and a little bit in Canada as well, and design. And so all of those things come together in a kind of a small repertory kind of situation, and so students and alumni get a wonderful experience.
Well, we'll talk about the story itself, but now that we've got everybody's interest here about Almost Maine, Henry Ford College theatrical production, it begins next week, Thursday, June 15th. Goes through, Saturday, also at 8 p.m., 17th, Sunday, June 18th at 2 p.m., I'm so excited, losing my voice here. And the following week, the similar schedule, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, June 29th, 30th, and July 1st at 8 p.m. And then Sunday is at 2 p.m. And we want to indicate here, it's not that the very next week, you're skipping the weekend of June 22nd to 25th.
That's correct. That's correct.
That's important, especially for us here at WHOR, because I just made that mistake itself. I said the next weekend. So it's 2 weekends, but it's not... Is there a particular reason why you're skipping the weekend of the 22nd to 25th?
Yeah, that's unusual. Usually we do 2 consecutive weekends and stuff, but Amanda had a prior commitment.
Well,
so we decided to postpone that second weekend, so that's why we have that break.
That's okay. Gives us extra time to plug the second week, too, on the air.
But, yes, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. This is here again, folks, as I said at the outset, at the Adria Auditorium on the main campus of Henry Ford College, 5101 Evergreen Road, in the Fine Arts Center here. Okay, let's talk about the play itself. Almost Maine, it has gotten a lot of critical acclaim. It hasn't actually run on Broadway, or has it? No.
Not to the best of my knowledge. Yeah. Its kind of claim to fame is that it's so flexible, first of all, in terms of casting. You can use 4 people like we are, or because you've got 9 sketches, you can use, and there's generally 2 people per sketch, right? So you can use 18, 19, actually 20 people could be the total cast number. So it's very flexible for casting. It's very popular in high schools because of that flexibility of casting and the romantic themes, as well as in colleges and community theaters. I think it was the year before this past year, it was the most produced play in the United States.
Wow.
And it is not just kind of a romantic sitcom, although there are elements of that too. It explores different elements of romantic relationships.
Love and loss.
Yeah. Right, yes.
Those two are tied together, yes, I'm afraid. Sorry to say. Yeah. And of course, the town itself, the fictional Almost town called Almost Maine, is therefore a little... it's off. It's not really part of the so-called mass culture we have now. So it's sort of a capsule focusing on just the people and their involvements. I mean, it's not influenced by hip hop and social media. I mean, within the drama itself.
Well, right. Yeah, I think one of the things that he does with
no the, put down to hip hop and social media here, but
is that he's looking at small town people. rather than right. urban people, you know. Sure, it's sure. very different living in a large urban area. He's looking at people whose lives surround each other's, right, because they're in a small town, right? And so they don't have those kinds of distractions or those kinds of huge social environments that somebody living in an urban area would. So a lot of people in the town know each other, not everyone, of course, mm-hmm. and the characters in the scenes know each other, right? So there's a social network there, the fabric of which, you know, in urban America, in contemporary times at least, we've kind of lost, right? Because it's real easy to get lost in a big city, uh-huh. right? And you know, be kind of isolated unless you find a, you know, a community that you can join and that you enjoy. It's very easy. But here the people are all, you know, all pretty much involved with each other. And so that's what it really focuses on.
And obviously, therefore, it's primarily an actor's play rather than special effects or music, because there's little of that, I assume. But that's great also because it's going to be in what you refer to as the black box theatrical experience, which means we stuff everybody in a black box somewhere. No, I always call it theater in the round or something. It's not quite round.
Well, no, you can. Black box simply means that you're in a small space, a small stage, and usually it's painted black just so that the light doesn't go where you don't want it to go.
Oh, that's right. You don't want them to bounce. And
right. But you can set up a black box, any kind of staging you want. We have proscenium staging, so the audience sits on one side, and we have created a scenic environment of the snow environment and both the outdoor and indoor scenes.
But they're up close.
But they're close, yes, very close to the actors.
So with the great actors we have, they can really get involved with the... Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have to be careful of your subtle facial expressions, too. It's like you're doing a close-up on a camera.
Yeah,
almost,
sometimes it feels
because people
like
are
that.
Only
yeah.
but it's, maybe 6 to 8 feet away at the closest, and maybe 15 or 20 at most.
Yeah, so. But it's a nice exchange of energy.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
It feels really good.
Yeah. And, of course, being comedy, you can sort of... I assume, as a sensitive actor, you can build your timing off the response from the audience too.
Oh, yeah.
That especially when you're up close like that, it should be a great experience. I thought it was interesting too, reading here that it was written by a Tony nominated, and of course the Tonys are coming up on Sunday night on television, the Tony Awards. But that's a big time award for Broadway plays. Or New York City plays. Maybe they do Off-Broadway awards, too? Yeah, okay. Anyway.
No, it's just the Broadway.
Oh, just Broadway.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, heck with those Off-Broadway. Huh?
No, that's a different award. Yeah, the Drama Desk Awards and some of the others are for the Off-Broadway stuff.
I didn't know that. I knew there was a drama. Okay, anyway. John Cariani. Mm-hmm. Cariani is best known for a role he did in Law and Order from 2002 to 2007. Julian Beck, was that a police officer or...?
I believe that was one of the lawyers, one of the DAs or the assistant DAs.
Seems to be one of their psychiatrist profilers, I remember. He was...
maybe that's what the role was, yeah.
No, I don't think so, because it was a Chinese-American I'm thinking of.
Oh, yeah. I didn't actually but research
who,
which
who
particular
actually
role
was in
that
a lot
was.
Of other dramatic things, theatrical, television, and so on, and so I just noticed him. But so he must know... Since he was an actor himself, too, I guess I'm not saying that the best playwrights were actors themselves, but that certainly is an awareness, a special awareness you can get from doing that.
Absolutely.
And so this seems really exciting, folks. Almost Maine. It's going to be done right here, live, yes, at Henry Ford College, at the Adria Auditorium in the Fine Arts Center, starting next week Thursday and through next weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 8 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m., taking a weekend off and coming back on the 29th through July 1st at 8 p.m. and then July 2nd at 2 p.m. And we'll keep mentioning, of course, that here on the air at on WHFR. Tickets are $15 a person for the general public, $12 for HFC employees, thank you very much. Senior citizens, thank you very much. Do I get a double discount because I fit two categories?
Mm-hmm.
And No.
Yeah.
Students with a valid photo ID.
Actually, there's a sale going on up until June 10th. All
tomorrow.
Seats are $5.
Oh, boy.
So
online.
You can go to the website mm-hmm. and purchase the tickets. You can go to the college website, then go to the theater link, and then on the theater homepage, it'll have a buy tickets link. Mm-hmm. And so that sale is through the 10th for $5 per seat. So
yeah, and if they want to go directly, it's theater, T-R-E, .hfcc.edu, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the T-R-E is not a misspelling. It's the real elite way of saying theater.
Well, it's the European spelling, yeah.
Well, we want to be.
Yep.
Didn't they start theater in Europe somewhere, like in Greece? Or?
Oh, well, yeah, that was all part of it, right? It was kind of
so you got to spell it the way that they would have used
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's the older spelling. Yep.
Okay, that's the tribute, yes. Although we don't have any comedy tragedy masks hung anywhere, do we? They used to do that with a lot of theaters.
Oh, well.
Since that was a Greek, like there was only two kinds of Greek plays, I think, if I remember my history, either a tragedy or a comedy style or genre, if you will. But it's great, folks, and it'll be a lot of fun. So I highly recommend next week, starting Thursday, Almost Maine here at HFC. Any other special insights you'd like to share? I was excited last week, Jerry. We talked about the play coming up in November again. So it's sort of a children's theater focus, but it's really for the whole family, and I can't remember what it is now.
Wonderful family show, Seussical the Musical, based on the works of Dr.
Yes.
Seuss. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That should
wonderful
be a
show.
Tremendous fun.
Oh, yeah.
If anybody can say all the lines and all the rhymes of all the lines. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for laughing.
There will be the Cat in the Hat serves as the narrator in particular production.
Great.
And there's some wonderful songs in it.
Sure.
Some dancing as well. And Mary Bremer, one of our faculty members, who's an award-winning actress from the area. She'll be the director for that show.
That should be great fun. Great fun. So, yes, it was. I have mentioned, I think, on the air that George Popovich, our theater director here and full-time theater instructor for many years, a couple decades. I think remember hiring him
32
myself.
32-ish years.
I was on his hiring committee. Oh, boy. And we'll miss him greatly, but we are carrying on. All the people here are continuing the same schedule pretty much, and we've got the same talented group of students and alumni who are part of this. So it's a very, very special theatrical experience, and it's if you haven't tried live theater recently, folks, this would be a great reintroduction.
And I do want to mention Nick Boyd, our new lighting designer, because there's some wonderful lighting effects in the show as well. And of course, we have some other students on the crew who have been very, very helpful in the process of mounting the production.
Okay. Well, we look forward to Almost Maine here at Henry Ford College starting next Thursday, folks. Thank you, Jerry Jablinski and Amanda Bates, for coming by the show today.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll go on with, here's a comment from Jim Hightower, and it seems like a national topic, but I'll turn it around and connect it to Dearborn in just a moment. Here's Jim Hightower.
The Trumpeters are fully embracing the right wing's imperious disdain for poor people, blaming them for creating their own economic distress, a convenient ideological fabrication for a government intent on destroying our nation's social safety net. And who better to mouth this moral rationalization of a patently immoral policy than Trump's housing secretary, Dr. Ben Carson? Raised in poverty, he became a renowned and very wealthy surgeon, so other impoverished Americans should do likewise. Carson recently spoke to this, explaining that poverty is just, quote, a state of mind. See? It's simple, simplistically speaking. Of course, poverty is actually a state of money, i.e. the lack thereof. It's also a state of joblessness, of miserly minimum wages, of being disabled, of limited education, of a prison record, and of many other hard-knock realities. Carson offers bootstrap babble about poor people having, quote, the wrong mindset, adding that America's safety net has made poverty too cozy for the poor, all of which is a plutocratic fantasy to make Trump and company feel righteous about trying to cut off the helping hand. One cut whacks $6 billion out of Carson's own agency, including a vital program helping 5 million very low-income Americans rent apartments. 9 out of 10 of them are either elderly, people with disabilities, veterans, or working poor people with children. Slamming the door in their faces condemns most of them to living on the streets. How does that make America great? This is Jim Hightower saying it's time to say the obvious. The likes of Trump and Carson are incompetent ideologues operating as if gutting government programs will magically make our country's complex problems go away. They simply don't know what they're doing, don't know how to govern a great democracy, and they're making a great mess.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Jim Hightower is always a stimulating commentator. He's based in Texas. You could probably hear the Texas drawl a little bit there. But he is speaking the truth. His opinions may be slightly exaggerated, but we are here to challenge you. And, of course, housing, this is the local area spin, housing is a big issue. Here in Dearborn, in the city of Detroit, a lot of people need low-cost and safe housing. And so what the department now under Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, has to do is to make that all possible. And he has had quotes recently, some of which has been tried to be supported by some commentators, that all it takes is the right attitude and you won't be poor anymore. Okay, well, it certainly takes gumption, it takes effort, it takes perseverance, it takes education, therefore knowledge, in order to change your situation in life. And isn't there some responsibility in government, our democratic government, democratically elected government, although Ben Carson was appointed, don't they have a responsibility to help in that process? You know, that's the question. And a lot of people in our society say, yes, that's why we have government, to help us, to those in need. Not to, you know, give them a free ride. That's not what either welfare or housing, low-cost housing, subsidized housing situations are all about. It's not a free ride thing. It's a thing where people can get established on their own and take their own initiatives. But at a certain point, they need some help. They need to be bootstrapped. Just like we went past Memorial Day, but our armed forces, when they returned from World War II, they were set back a few years by the war they had to fight in terms of their lives, their careers, their jobs, their families. And so we came up with a plan to pay for the college education. And so many people, including some of the people that were on the English Division faculty here way back in 1968 when I started Henry Ford College, they went on to get their degrees and their graduate degrees later thanks to those programs from the federal government to help them get established. And they obviously had the perseverance and they acquired the knowledge and they were superior teachers. We have superior teachers now, of course, but I'm just saying today, government's not helping anybody go to college who needs assistance. They're doing nothing. Go in debt. And so almost approaching $2 trillion of collective debt for people just trying to get an education, a quality education in higher ed, which is not an option these days. It really isn't. I mean, beyond high school, you need more education. You know, my counselor back in 1964, when I was graduating from high school, said, you know, no one can get by with just a high school education. Not well, not much. And their options are choices of life are really very, very few with only a high school education. Well, that's so much more true today. So I am one, and again, all opinions of the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college, but I'm one that believes that government does have a place to helping us secure the pursuit of life, liberty, and even happiness. I won't go on that vein. I could expand on that too, but Jim Hightower is, at the very least, you have to admit, entertaining to listen to. And he's a senior citizen too. Another connection with Dearborn, because the majority of our people here in Dearborn are over the age of 50. Okay, maybe you don't want to be called a senior citizen until you're over, what, 62? But nonetheless, majority are over 60. So important comments. And the Housing Administration, the Federal Government Housing Administration, should not have the attitude of hands off. All government agencies should be here trying to help us. And those, especially those that need some help to get started, to get established, to become secure and of course, independent and on our own, too. But it takes a while. It takes some learning. Takes some development to get to that point. All right. Shifting on the journal to, of course, Dearborn News. A lot of things happening always around Dearborn and the surrounding area. Top story from this Wednesday from the Dearborn Times-Herald. And I also looked at pressandguide.com on the website because I didn't get my Press and Guide physical newspaper on Wednesday. Did I call them? No. I'm just so mad. But delivery is a problem. The Times-Herald is probably more expensive, but they actually send the papers out in the mail. So they have to print, you know, a day or two in advance in order to get them out in the mail. But the top story from this Wednesday's Times-Herald, Dearborn Council okays $117 million budget for 2017-2018. Here's the story. It is a $7 million increase. That $117 million is a $7 million increase from the current year. Proposed city tax rate of 26.44 mils represents a 0.25 mil decrease. Okay, so you're going to pay less taxes in the next fiscal year. And that decrease is primarily due to a new service contract for the garbage and rubbish millage. That's what it says. I didn't know we had a separate millage for that. A new service contract for garbage and millage, yes. But anyway, garbage and rubbish, this includes street sweeping, leaf program, and downtown area eligible cleaning initiatives. So whether it's a separate millage or whatever, I don't believe it's a separate millage. I think it's just a cost of city government, and they were able to renegotiate that contract and save money so they didn't have to collect as many mills, that is, tax dollars, when you add it up. And what is that 26.44 mills? If you're not sure what a mill is, that's M-I-L-L-S. Again, its taxes would be $2,644 for a home with $100,000 state equalized valuation. And the way we do it here in Michigan, you know, that means that basically it's 50% of the market value, the sales price, the potential sales price. So if you think you could sell your home in Dearborn for $200,000, then your state equalized valuation is $100,000. And, of course, it's not up to you. I mean, that's, you know, there are assessors that go out to figure out your evaluation. So it's $26.44 for every $1,000 in taxable value if you want to add that up for your own situation. So it's a little bit less, because they saved a lot of money on the garbage and rubbish contract. Okay? And included in the $1.8 million, included in this budget is $1.8 million for charges for services for the new Consolidated Dispatch Center and $2.2 million one-time return from the Capital Improvement Fund. One of the biggest changes in expenditures for the city comes in the fire department with the addition of 24 full-time positions. Included are 12 new firefighter positions that increase the budget salary and wages by $771,000 and benefits by $330,000. That's the usual way it goes these days. Benefits are almost one-fourth of the total payment per employee in public service. The police and fire departments, as you know, but it's kind of amazing, some people represent 56% of the general fund budget. And police are 33.7% and fire is 22.3%. Both departments see cost increased at $2.8 million for police and $4.3 million for fire from the current fiscal year. And that's the situation. There is a follow-up here on page 8A, and I can't remember if there was other information there. Facilities Fund, which helps renovate and pay off city buildings and operations, physical operations, is almost a $25 million increase within that budget due to a long-term debt proceeds for the Powerhouse Distribution System, whatever that is, a Levergood Pool Bathhouse replacement, which I think is in progress, not done yet, and Wagner Place Parking Deck contributed asset from the Brownfield Authority. So we're putting a little money into that West Airborne development that Ford Motor Company is primarily funding to develop the parking deck. They need a bigger parking deck there. And I know we're doing some landscaping, too, out of the city budget. But we are getting help from the Brownfield Authority, which is, I think, a state government agency. And we've received Brownfield money in the past, I know, under Mayor Guido, too. Brownfield money is basically used to clean up properties that have some sort of toxic problem, you know, with poisonous chemicals or... So I think all of the Brownfield money goes to redevelopment of an area that would just be a little bit too expensive for the cities themselves to redevelop. And someone coming into that area doesn't want to have to do that cleanup, if you will, of whatever the problems are in that area. They just want to build their new stuff. Okay, so $1.8 million also, there'll be $1.8 million rise will come from the Employee and Retiree Insurance Fund premium. It's there's an increase there in the cost for insurance fund money. But again, overall, even though the budget's $7 million more, taxes are going down a little bit, 25 cents per thousand. So thank you very much. Going way back to last Sunday, June 4th, the last time I got a physical pressing guide at my house, Post Bar, we talked about them, they're one of the bars in West Dearborn, and in an effort to keep their liquor license, they have now agreed with the city to pay for police patrols at the business. So constant police patrols cost extra money, and they're going to be paying for that so that it is, they won't be breaking, it won't be ruckus or unsafe situations in either inside or outside. For a while, they didn't want to do that. I know that proposal came up a while back, and they said, well, I'll do that, and then there was more trouble, and the city threatened to take away their liquor license, which means they'd have to close, and so they have agreed. So there you go. Council President Pro Tem Thomas Tefelsky called for that liquor license to be revoked if the owners failed to follow through on their promise, because they did initially promise to pay for officers, and then they decided they weren't going to, and so they are going to do that. Post Bar is located at 22,065 Michigan Avenue in West Downtown. Spirit Festival has been going on for a couple of days now. A couple showers maybe coming up later this afternoon. I know it sprinkled here this morning. But fun will be had by all, and if it's raining a little bit, what the heck? Take an umbrella. I'm not saying they'll let you ride the rides in the carnival area if it's raining, but a lot of things can probably still continue. This year, the focus is on what they're called Saluting the Beatles. And I have the schedule here, too, of what's remaining at the Spirit Fest out there in Dearborn Heights. Today, Friday, June 9th, is what they call the Annual Community Service Club Night. Amusement rides start at 3 p.m., go to midnight. And then they have a dance review from 5 to 5:45. Crestwood High School Cheerleaders, 6:25 p.m. And the big music performance tonight is Steve King and the Diddleys. Diddleys. Okay. He plays top 40 from the 70s and 80s. Police versus Fire Softball Challenge is at 7 p.m. And that's what's going on this afternoon and this evening at Spirit Fest. And, of course, that's Dearborn Heights, the Canfield Community Center grounds. That's at Beach Daily, one block south of Ford Road. Anybody can go to this, not just Dearborn Heights people, by the way. Saturday, June 10th, tomorrow is the 12th Annual Military Appreciation Day. Amusement park rides start at noon, going to midnight. There'll be a salute to our military past and present featuring the Ford Chorus from 1 to 2 p.m. tomorrow. And 31st Annual Mayor's Walk at 2:30 p.m., registration at 2 p.m. A little better than homecoming, because homecoming, usually if there is a Mayor's Walk, I'm not sure they're doing it anymore since they moved the seniors event to later in the year, into September, I believe. It's not on the Friday starting homecoming. So I'm not sure the mayors, but the mayors were always walking for years at 8 a.m. or 8:30. Oh, my goodness. I'm not that kind of exerciser, I know, first thing in the morning. Afternoons, that seems a little more friendly. So that's at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. I'm not sure how far they're walking. 3 to 5 p.m., the Dwayne Malinowski Polka Band. And then, even though it's a Beatles tribute weekend, they've got two other tribute bands there. Tomorrow night is 5:30 to 7 p.m. is the Danny D Band, which is a Rod Stewart tribute band. Not Beatles, but Rod Stewart. And then Crestwood High School, not the cheerleaders, but their pom-pom squad. I thought it was pom-pom, but it's pom-pom. 7:25. And then the Journey Tribute Band follows after the Stewart Tribute Band, and they're called Captured Detroit. Apparently they were very successful last year. 7:30 to 10 p.m. Top 40 hits from Journey, 70 from the 80s, it says. Form the 80s, it says, but I think that's a misprint. And, I see. The Journey tribute is from 7:30 to 9, and then the Captured Detroit band switches to top 40 hits from the 80s at 9 p.m. So they take off their Journey hats or whatever, and they become normal rock and rollers, whatever. All right, Sunday, June 11th in Dearborn Heights at the Canfield Community Center, 31st Annual Family Day. Starting with music rides at noon, Dance Corner Studio Dance Review at 2. Tartar Sauce is from 3 to 5. That's a Dixieland music band. At 4:30 to 5:30, Fred Wolf is performing. He does, no, not a Beatles tribute, Elvis tribute, Elvis Presley tribute. Then the Crestwood High School Pom Pom Squad is coming back at 5:55. And then, yes, then the Beatles Tribute Band, and this band that does Beatles, or authentic Beatle renditions, is called Toppermost. Haven't heard of them before, but I'm sure there's many Beatles Tribute Bands around. And they'll be performing from 6 to 9 p.m. on Sunday night. No fireworks each evening, unlike Dearborn Homecoming, that I know of, not talked about here. If parking is a problem, some people said their parking is a problem at the Canfield Center, you can take a free air-conditioned Spirit Festival Express. Well, that beats Dearborn because they use the high school buses, I think, for our shuttle service, and they're not air-conditioned, folks. But anyway, the Spirit Festival Air-Conditioned Bus Express is free. And they pick up people at the Dearborn Heights Post Office on Ford Road, just east of the Heights Shopping Center. Okay, so there's a lot of parking there, like at the Heights Shopping Center. And the Spirit Festival Express runs every 10 minutes from 5 to 11 p.m. Today and tomorrow, and from 5 to 10 p.m. on June 11th. For more information about the Dearborn Heights Spirit Festival, you can call the Spirit Festival hotline at 313-791-3607. That's Spirit Festival at 313-791-3607. Okay. Moving right along here on the new WHFR Journal. From WHFR, the station making waves, we want to tell you about, and we've recorded this beautiful promotion here, promotional spot for you to listen to, about our big fundraising event coming up. It's Blues Music at the historic Hastings Street Ballroom on Sunday afternoon, 2 to 6, coming up on June 25th, just 2 weeks from Sunday. So listen up and take note.
Get up and dance away your blues. Get up. Please join WHFR for summertime fun with great music, good food, as WHFR 89.3 and the Detroit Blues Society present Ladies Sing the Blues at Hastings Street Ballroom, 2 p.m. till 6 p.m. on Sunday, June 25th. Thornetta Davis. Eliza Neals with special guest Howard Glazier. I'm a voodoo woman with a cross in my hand. Voodoo woman with a cross in my hand. And Alicia Marie. Oh, you find me. $15 general admission for adults 21 and over. Ladies Sing the Blues on Sunday, June 25th, 2 p.m. till 6 at the Hastings Street Ballroom, 715 East Milwaukee in Detroit. Please join WHFR for Station Making Waves.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the special catering of food from Smoky Roads Barbecue. They are the official barbecue provider, caterer for the Detroit Blues Society. So that's going to be a lot of fun on Sunday afternoon from 2 to 6 p.m. in Detroit at the historic Hastings Street Ballroom. Three great, great blues artists, Thornetta Davis, Eliza Neals, with special guest Howard Glazier, and Alicia Marie, a new young talent from Michigan area here. And all with great blues albums that are featured on our blues shows here at WHFR. Of course, two of them are coming up this afternoon, back-to-back. 2 to 4 p.m. is Highway 61 with Kitty Love. And from 4 to 6 p.m., Go With the Flow show with Mike Holloway. So great blues coming up after the new WHFR Journal today. Well, we told you that not next week, but the week after, there's going to be great candidate forums scheduled, and they're going to be videotaped both in Dearborn Heights and in Dearborn for the people, including the people that are running, well, the people that decide to show up anyway, for these forums, all sponsored by the League of Women Voters, coming up not next week, but the following week. And we'll give you the dates and times again as we get closer to that, like next week's show. You can look up that information for yourself at League of Women Voters, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, which is just their letters, their initials, lvwddh.org. See how easy that is? And you can see that where these forums, it's always good to attend in person, because if it's videotaped, the cameras can only look at one person at a time. I'm always interested in attending these forums, and you should be too, because you can see how all the people that are sitting at the forum on the stage are responding. How are they reacting? And of course, you could talk to them before if you know who they are, and certainly afterwards for a few minutes too, one on one. And but these things, I know the Dearborn Heights forums will be videotaped, and it'll be on a YouTube page. I think Dearborn Heights has a city YouTube page, and or a link from their website to the YouTube page. And Dearborn, cityofdearborn.org, will have the video presentation streamed directly from the city website. But next week, not the week after, but next week, Southwest Dearborn Heights is going to have a forum too, with all the candidates who are running for mayor and all the city council candidates running, all on the same evening. So it'll be sort of a warm-up. Candidates can practice their sound bites, their brief little statements that make them sound really intelligent without giving any detailed information. And of course, who knows how many will show up. But this one is going to be on Thursday night, June 15th, next week. It's at the Richard Young Recreation Center, in this case, because it's sponsored by the Southwest Dearborn Heights Neighborhood Association. And there's nothing wrong with going to more than one candidate forum, because maybe the candidates will say something different. Maybe they'll really mess up or come up with a great, brilliant idea the second time around. So this is the first time around in Southwest Dearborn Heights, but anybody can attend. I don't think it would be that much direct interest to anyone outside Dearborn Heights. But anyone in Dearborn Heights can attend the one forum coming up next Thursday night at the Southwest Neighborhood Association. Richard A. Young Recreation Center on McKinley Street, starting at 6 o'clock. Doors open at 6. mayoral candidates will be up at 6:30, and then the city council candidates will be talk on after 7:30. So, something to put on your calendar. A night out listening to your future leaders. Who are you going to vote for on August 8th? And then, of course, it's whittled down to fewer people for the November election. And so both are very important. Because what matters to you most is what's local, we always say on this show. What's right next door. And you can have a big difference. You can make a big difference in your choice of those candidates and how you relate to them before and after they get elected. You can have amazing impact locally. Not so much at the state level and hardly at all in terms of what's happening in Washington, D.C., especially today. But nonetheless, you can try. Dearborn School Board held interviews for their open seat. We explained the procedure to you on this show, and we told you on this show that exactly how this would happen is that they get applicants. And it's been in the newspapers, and then they'll have interviews. They decided each candidate, it already took place. Each candidate got the same five questions, and they had 15 minutes to answer all five and give a closing statement. And they did them one at a time. People were in the audience because it was a board meeting, and about 70 people attended in the audience. And so the story is in Press and Guide, and I think it will appear, it says June 7th. It got on the Press and Guide website, so it'll probably be in the Press and Guide this Sunday. Katie Hedrick, who has covered the school board meetings, including Henry Ford College meetings, same people, different days usually, has some comments about what each person said. Now, they haven't decided who is going to be chosen. I think that's going to happen this coming Monday. Okay. So we'll know about it next week because there'll be a school board meeting this Monday when they vote and make the decision. But here's another sort of interesting story from the Press and Guide, also from Wednesday. Dearborn School trustee drops out of interview process for new board member. Before the Dearborn Public Schools Board of Education could even begin interviewing six potential new school board members earlier this week, one of the existing trustees tried to get them to give up their role of appointing a new person, saying that he would not participate in the appointment process and hinting that the board might have violated the Open Meetings Act in the process. Other trustees assured, and who is this person? Hussein Berry brought up this objection, but other trustees assured him there was no violations as a plan was developed for how to replace outgoing board president Miriam Bazzi, who was appointed to circuit court judge by Governor Snyder a while back. And Barry said it took 2 weeks after the public announcement that Bazzi had been appointed as a Wayne County circuit judge before he heard anything about how the board would proceed with appointing a new president and filling the vacant position. Now, that does surprise me. I'm sorry to have to make a comment here, but he's been on the board for quite a long time. Doesn't he remember when they replaced Amy Scholes? They used the same system, the same procedure. I know he was there during the time, wasn't he? Did he have some time off? He left for a while and came back, I think. Anyway, he said the notification he received was from a phone call from current board vice president, Michael Mead. And Barry said, "You told me what they were thinking and said at that point that this is what five of us were thinking." So I guess he felt a little left out there. "He called me up to bring me up to snuff," Barry said, apparently offended by the phrase, which he repeated several times. Now, I've talked to some, elderly members here, people who have a history of understanding slang, about the phrase up to snuff. And no, none of us are offended if we were told that. I haven't looked up the root meaning of the word snuff. I have heard about snuff films. Isn't that a particularly violent kind of movie where somebody gets killed? But up to snuff doesn't have any reference like that. I don't know where Hussein Berry got that idea. I do think what the phrase should have been is up to speed. We're going to get you up to speed by letting you know what, in this case, a majority of the board had already agreed to do, which, by the way, is what they've done in the past. So it shouldn't be a very big deal. So Barry was offended by the phrase up to snuff, which doesn't mean up to speed, but it's, you know, it's almost that. Now, Mike Mead did not respond, at least not at the meeting, but every other trustee said no group conversations occurred outside a meeting. Trustee Mary Lane said she had asked two trustees if they were interested in being board president, including Mead, who did not want the role. Lane ended up being the only nomination for the president's position and was appointed by unanimous vote. Barry's contention centered around the selection of a new trustee, not Lane's appointment. So there's two different things we're talking about here. They do appoint their own officers among themselves each year. Okay. Lane noted the similar situation occurred less than 2 years ago in terms of the Amy Scholes problem. So before the meeting was over, Barry made a motion that the board not appoint a new trustee and turn the process over to Wayne County Regional Educational Service Agency, also known as RESA. RESA is required to fill any school board vacancies if the local district does not do so within 30 days. When Lane asked if he would explain why he made the motion, Barry shrugged and said, no. Before considering the idea, Trustee Fadwa Hamoud said she wanted to understand Barry's concern, but instead of explaining the rationale behind it, Barry withdrew the motion altogether. He later said that on the advice of his attorney, he would not be engaging, quote unquote, be engaging in the interview process for the new trustee, and he would not give a reason why. Citing board ethics policies, saying Trustee Mary Petchelkoff said, we render all decisions based on the available information and independent judgment. So that's the way the board does things, and that's what Mary Petchelkoff said. She also cited another part of district policy, noting the role of trustee includes fulfilling the responsibilities and requirements of the school board. The board has to move forward with appointing a new trustee, according to Petchelkoff. And she said, quote, there isn't one best decision or one right way to do it, unquote. So a little tiff there. Can I say tiff? Everybody understand the meaning of the word tiff? If not, snuff? Okay. Moving on. So many exciting things happening here, Dearborn. Only 5 minutes to go in the hour. And I know you want this to go on forever. But interesting thing that may affect us here, unless there's some situation about when this goes into effect. But in the Metro Times for this week, from yesterday specifically on their website, Governor Snyder signed a law to take away retirement benefits from corrupt public workers. Public employees who've been convicted of felonies that breach the public's trust will lose some retirement benefits under a new Michigan law. The law enacted Wednesday requires a public employee or retiree to relinquish accumulated employer contributions toward a retirement benefit if convicted of crimes like misusing funds or taking bribes. Michigan law had previously allowed for the forfeiture of benefits if a public employee was convicted of such crimes, but a new rule requires that it extends the penalty to a convicted worker's 401k, not just their pension, depending on what they had. The law comes as Michigan Attorney General Bill Schulte tries to take away the pensions of 12 former Detroit public school officials convicted in a $2.7 million kickback scheme. And the reason I brought this up was because we know that there is a trial that's going to start up, I think, soon. It hasn't started yet, but it is going to trial, and that is with former city clerk Kathleen Buda, who is charged with taking money from the city of Dearborn over a period of time, cash out of the till. Everybody understand the meaning of the word till? Okay. And one thing that came up in the city council was that, well, if she is convicted of this, the Dearborn City Council questioned this, does that mean she loses her pension here in Dearborn? And the legal opinion from the lawyer in the city said, no, she won't lose her pension. I think that was. But this would be a felony if Kathleen Buda is convicted. And the law is in place now, although the time that she supposedly committed the crime is before the law was passed. So would this apply to her if she's found guilty? Would it take away her retirement benefits, which are paid for by the city of Dearborn, or what? Just wondering. Seems to apply to us. Here's another big question. Also, it came up in the New York Times today, and I know I saw it some other place, I think mlive.com. Mackinac Island has a permanent population of 500 people and just as many horses, but no cars. From May to October, the Michigan Getaway relies on about 3,000 workers to power its economic engine, which is, of course, summer tourism. Historically, up to a third of those workers are foreigners who are hired on seasonal visas. But when many of the island's business owners applied for those visas this year, they heard from the government that none were left. That is the federal government. They've asked Homeland Security Secretary John F. Kelly, the new one, the authority to release more visas, and urged him back on May 12th to do it swiftly. During a recent Senate hearing, Kelly said he would probably release additional visas, but did not specify when or how many. Well, summer is starting. Well, I know not officially until June 22nd, but I bet there's some brave tourists. A little chilly on Mackinac Island, I bet, but they're up there now. My question is, of course, if they need 3,000 workers, why don't they hire from Michigan? And the answer probably is those fancy-dancy hotels and other things going on the island that need workers, they don't pay enough money. And nobody wants to be sequestered way the heck up there with nothing else to do. For instance, one hotel, the Iroquois Hotel, a Victorian property, where rooms command up to $1,200 a night, they don't know how they're going to maintain their standards without getting their 30 Jamaican housekeepers. So how much are they paying? I bet there's people willing to be a housekeeper if they pay enough. When the rooms are $1,200 a night, maybe that's a double room, who knows. I just can't figure that out. I'm sure there's a lot of high school students that'd be willing to work hard. Maybe they've never done housekeeping before. But summer on Mackinac Island sounds kind of idyllic to me, even if I have to work 8 hours a day. I don't know. Just saying. There's also, finally, a protest tomorrow in Lansing, a march against Sharia law. But our locally elected representatives, including Debbie Dingell, have said, don't attend that. There is a counter the counter to that march against Sharia group is just pointing out how obviously this group is just anti-Muslim and it's full of hate. And that's what Debbie Dingell says. Don't be part of this march, either for or against, probably. And it's going to be in Lansing. They think only a few people are going to show up. It is from 3 to 4 p.m. tomorrow at the Michigan State Capitol. Wash Away the Hate is one group, and the other group is ACT, A-C-T, for America. Okay, that's all we have time for, so I guess that's it for today. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal. Stay tuned for Highway 61 with Kitty Love, Best in the Blues, coming right up. This is WHFR Dearborn.